Welcome back, Raw Thoughts listeners. Mackenzie Tiggs, where I bring on individuals in our community and we just talk about their stories, whether it be them coming from something, their businesses. And today I have Parker from So Good. He was actually just recently on KTVB on just the amazing things that he's doing within our community. So Parker, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, Parker, born and raised here in Idaho. I say born and raised, but I actually left California when I was like 8 or 9. My dad and mom were both from here. And then for some reason, my dad decided to move to Pomona, California to help in a school for kids. Yeah. So back in Idaho, how did that happen? So I joined the Marine Corps, toured all over the world, was in a Harrier squadron, and then I put in job offers all over the United States. I had just got married, had a young daughter, which was one, and I got one job offer, and that was to work for the Idaho State Police. And so I came up here and started at ISP in the IT department, and I had an amazing boss, Ben Clements, and he's the one that really mentored me into all things IT. And about 2.5 years into working there, he was out riding a four-wheeler and just a weird freak accident and passed away.
Wow.
And yeah, that's how I kind of moved up to being the head of IT at Idaho State Police. And yeah, he was a huge, huge mentor to me. It's pretty difficult transition, to be honest. Yeah, that's how I got back here to Idaho.
So what is a Harrier squad? What is that?
Oh, a Harrier squadron. So if you ever watched the movie True Lies, Harriers are the vertical takeoff and landing aircraft. They're jets. So if you've ever seen like the F-35 jet, they're amazing, you know, just flying off of a deck. But the Marine Corps ones have, they can turn the air down and then the jet can just lift off vertically. And, then take off from there.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And you were in charge of?
So I actually worked in a bunch of different facets with Harriers. I was on the flight line with them. And then I worked in kind of the IT department for them. Computer systems for Harriers.
What kind of like computer systems are you having to do? Like, what would you have to do with that?
All kinds. We worked on systems inside avionics systems, but then we also worked on the computer systems for maintenance and things like that. So anything that had to do with the Harrier, both inside and then outside, tracking, you know, how many flights it had taken before we had taken this apart, you know, all those safety type things that pilots want to see before they take off.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was fun.
I would want to be the pilot, not do what you do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The pilots were pretty awesome.
So how did you get into IT? Because I feel like that is such you either have to understand it and really be diving deep into it, or you're not in it at all. Like, yeah, I'm not an IT person.
Yeah, that's such a weird question. Or not weird question, but like, I don't know how I did it. A weird journey, I'll say. So, so when my parents moved out to Pomona from Idaho when I was second grade, my dad was like, Pomona is rough, so I'm going to teach you at the table. So he homeschooled me all the way through my senior year.
Wow.
Yeah. And I get a lot of jokes like, oh, that's why you are the way you are. So I just was like, man, now what do I do with my life? My parents were like both school teachers. They were really community people. You know, they didn't really care about making money or, you know, I'm trying to think what the word is. Careers.
Right.
They were like, oh, you know, you just give your life to something. So I joined the Air Force, and I was at the recruiting station, and a Marine Corps recruiter walked up to me and he said, you really want to tell people for the rest of your life that you were in the Air Force? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, it would sound really cool if you told people I was the Marine. So I walked across the street and joined the Marine Corps. And then the IT department, I was always one that loved to take things apart and put them back together. And so when I got into those Harrier squadrons, I naturally just kind of moved toward these systems and asked people what they were doing. And then, my real, break in IT was when I started working at ISP. They just took a chance on me. They were like, look, this is a Marine. He was from Idaho. He's back in Idaho. We're going to give him a chance. And Ben Clements was the guy who gave me a chance. And so he just started teaching me all things IT. And then when he passed away, he had left all these, you know, notes and things for me to follow. And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here.
Wow.
Working in IT.
And are you still with ISP in the IT department?
No. So I worked at ISP for 5 years. And then I went to work for an IT company in the Valley called CompuNet. And then about a year ago, I went kind of deeper into IT. And I now work for a company called Cohesity that protects people from getting hit by ransomware.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how was your, what was your involvement with ISP? I mean, because I know the computer systems and sometimes, you know, having to ask ISP or like asking our IT within first responders, like, what was your correlation with the officers? What was your correlation with ISP itself in the IT? Like, what parts were you actually working on?
Oh, I had a blast there. Yeah, that's a great question. So we worked on what's called CJIS, or Criminal Justice Information Systems. So everything that you can imagine, again, with computers. And so when you're moving from a Harrier squadron or Marine Corps squadron, everything is connected into IT somehow. Like, even today, like, I think both of my washer and dryers are connected to Wi-Fi and will text me when the load is done. So you think about something like computer-aided dispatch. You used to have dispatch done by dispatchers, get on the phone, answer the call, and then they would have to manually think who is closest. So now, you know, there's Wi-Fi in all the cars. You can see where a car is, but then they'll be like, okay, that officer's in Boise, that one's in Caldwell, but I-84 has a lot of traffic because it's 5 o'clock. So actually the fastest guy is in CUNA. So we would work on those kind of systems, anything to do with computer, you know, and CJIS, those information systems. So CAD, which is computer-aided dispatch, RMS, records management systems, jail. Even things like, you didn't think about it, like tow trucks. So if a DUI happens or there's a wreck, there's a tow truck. And there's a bunch of tow trucks. And so we had to write scripts that would say, call tow truck A, and if he doesn't answer, then call B. But put A back at the top of the list, because just because he missed doesn't mean he's at the bottom.
Okay.
So, yeah, things like that.
That's kind of interesting. Like, yeah. How much is automated and we don't think about?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's so much automation. And then there's so much data now. So like before, there was just audio. It was just the dispatch. But you never got that many audio recordings of the cops when they were with somebody unless they turned on audio. But now you have audio and video.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm storing, you know, petabytes of storage, audio and video. And then some stuff has to get redacted. So you go to court and they want 18 versions of that same video, but certain things have to be redacted. And so we're doing, at ISP, we would do all of that in the IT department.
And they're going to court a lot. So that's a lot of.
Yeah. And you have to keep all that data forever. And then there's personal request. People can reach out and say, hey, I got pulled over. I want to see the video. So I have to go get that video, get that audio, burn it on a CD, and then send it to them, or, you know, somehow get that audio and video to them.
Wow. How are they storing that? Like, how is all of that getting stored? How are you not losing it? How do you find it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's like the story of everything. I mean, that's like your iPhone and iCloud. Just huge data centers all over the valley where you're storing a copy, and then there's another copy, and then there's another copy. And then there's like a third copy or fourth copy that's on a tape, like a big magnetic tape still, and put into a warehouse somewhere. Yeah. And we're constantly checking to make sure those things are still valid, doing full failover type tests. So if ISP gets hit in Boise and we have to start up a whole new facility somewhere else, all that, you know, once a month kind of thing, making sure that you can actually function without it.
Right. I mean, my thought goes to, like, how are people not finding ways to destroy this?
They are. That's what the ransomware events are happening. So what I've been focused on the last year, and I mean pretty much the last 5 or 6 years of my career, is trying to stop people from being totally devastated by ransomware. So what's happening is a company will come, or not company, a hacker will come, hack into ISP and say, now I have every single address in Idaho, I have all the plates, and I can sell this stuff to someone who wants this valuable data. If you want to stop me, pay me in Bitcoin, which they do. Or maybe it's sensitive information that you don't want out there, and they, you know, put that out there, or they take it and you can't do anything. So for instance, you're a Winco Foods, just an example, and they can get into your system and bring down your transaction systems. Well, now everyone's sitting there and they can't pay because those systems are being taken over by somebody. And it happens everywhere. I mean, it happened, I think, at major colleges, Boise State. You know, everyone's always looking for that because there's just so much data online now that everybody wants.
Why do people want it?
Because it's valuable. It's valuable data. I mean, if you could get into, we were just talking before this whole thing started about Park Mobile. Park Mobile got hit. So I have this app called Park Mobile in right. Boise. You park. That had my credit cards. It had my address. It had my phone number. It had my truck. It had my cars. Had all my information. I got an email from them that said, look, we've been hacked. All that information is out there now in the wild. So now I'm getting offers that say, hey, we know you have this truck. We know, different things about you. So now you can pinpoint, marketing because you have a treasure trove of information. That would be really hard to get otherwise.
Yeah. It sickens me of how many people do that and how many companies get hit and hacked.
It's true. But it's really, it's the nature of what we're doing. All of our data is somewhere now. I mean, you think about it like Alexa. Alexa's listening to everything you say. So when you say, hey, Alexa, da 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 da. But now, I put in Wi-Fi enabled locks on my doors, right? So you can come in and my kids are like, hey, I'm home from school early. Can you unlock it? And I can grab my phone and unlock it. But if somebody can hack into that system, then they can just unlock the doors, you know?
Yeah.
So I always tell people, yes, it's bad, but we're also, it's like the convenience. I love the convenience, but that convenience is costing us in data.
Right. There's always a risk factor
right.
in anything we do,
right.
Like risk and reward.
Yeah.
You know, the reward is okay. It's very convenient for you. The risk is that you
absolutely,
is out into the world.
Right. So you can go anywhere, and you can go to, pick flowers at Lily Hollow, and there's all these vendors, and they're like, oh, well, you don't have to, have cash anymore. You can have this, but as soon as you swipe your card, that's going into their system, and then when that gets taken, there's all your information. So it's like it's nice. I like the ability to pay with Venmo and PayPal, but as soon as PayPal and Venmo get hit, all of my information is at their disposal.
And so. Millions, billions of people. I mean, how many users do you think use Venmo or PayPal?
It's crazy. I don't even know what that number would be. It's massive. So but they're always getting attacked, and it's the nature of the business. And there's a bunch of things we're doing in the IT world. Not to talk IT, but there's now multi-factor authentication where I send you a text. You can use your ocular scanner on your phone. You can use your thumbprint. So we're definitely getting better. But those things have now come because you've seen it. You get a Facebook request from your friend and they're like, oh, that wasn't me. You got attacked. So we're getting better at it, but it's always reactive. It always is reactive.
Right.
Because you're like, oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah. Well, and they are, that's what they're doing, and that's what their brains are programming them to think that way is like, okay, how can we get into this? And so they're finding systems how to get into it, just as you're finding systems for them not to get in. And there's overlap at some point.
Yeah, for sure. I always think of it like the old times, they were like robbing banks, and then the banks got really good at, now it's really hard to rob a bank. And data is the new robbing of a bank. I mean, it's just that's where the money is. You think about it. You can hack into a system, say, hey, I've got all your stuff. Pay me $2 million in Bitcoin. It's not traceable. those guys get it, get out, and off they go. But as you've seen, the FBI is getting much better. I think organizations are getting better. I'm trying to. I do a monthly lunch and learn on cybersecurity and ransomware and things like that. And anyone's welcome to come. It's a lunch I do at Cobby's over on Shindon. And yeah, it's nice.
That's incredible. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
You have a lot. You have a lot going on.
A lot of fun things.
So other than your IT, you have So Good. Tell us about So Good.
Yeah, that's my passion. I always was trying to figure out, like, when did it actually start? And for me, I think it was, there was a lot of seeds. Obviously, Ben Clements passing away, he was a huge mentor to me at ISP. I wouldn't have been as successful in IT if it hadn't been for Ben. But in 2015, my dad passed away from a brain tumor. And it was a real shock to my system, as you can imagine, because my dad was young, in his 50s. And I began to realize that there was just like a ton more to life that I hadn't tapped into. Like my dad had had done very well, had, you know, a good 401k, you know, owned his house, all those things. And then he got a brain tumor. And as it began to press on his brain, you know, he didn't act like himself. And that's how we kind of knew. And he had passed away from that. But I was like, man, look at all this stuff that you acquire and do. And then it's kind of like all taken away. I didn't start focusing on stuff that can't be taken away. And that's like, you know, I'm just kind of thinking out loud. But that's like what I thought, like, what if I can like invest in things that are like future investments?
Right.
That nothing, they don't really exist here. And then in October of 2016, I was working in IT and I flew out for a conference at Las Vegas. And we were staying at the Mandalay Bay and had a friend with me, Jason Maroney, whose dad, Pat Maroney, actually owns Cobby's, longtime Idaho kid. And we were in this elevator, I'll never forget, packed elevator with all these 21 to 25-year-old kids. And they were all going to this country concert across the street. And looking back on that moment, I was kind of like frustrated at how loud they were and, you know, excited they were. And no part of me wanted to really interact with them. You know, I was just kind of like, those are children. And I never said anything to them. So we ended up, you know, him and I, we walked onto the street and I said, hey, let's go to the country concert. And he was like, oh, I hate country. Let's go get something to eat first. So we walked across the street from where the concert was happening and we ate. And then as we began to walk, the shooting started, and it was just, you know, as you'd imagine, it's just total chaos, right? Just, you know, even in my military days, I had never seen anything like that. And the two things that struck me that night were just how everyone, like, came together. I was standing on the street, like, early in the morning, that next morning, donating blood, or in a line to donate blood, and I was with like priest and strippers and men that owned their business and people that didn't have a home. And we were all standing together in this line to donate blood. And it was just so powerful. I think like the most powerful thing was I was out near the field where everything was happening. And it looked like the rapture had taken place. Like everyone left everything like it was. And there was all these cell phones going off of like parents and friends who knew about it and they were calling their loved ones. And I was like, some of those people are never gonna get that phone call again. And then I thought about that elevator and I was like, why didn't I connect with those kids? Why didn't I say something? Why didn't I just be like, hey, you know, like hope you guys have a nice night.
Yeah.
And like I went home and I actually flew home with some guys from Boise that had been hit, one hit in the head and one that had been hit through the knee. And like my whole perspective changed. I don't know how to describe it, but my whole perspective changed. And I would be in an elevator and I would say, hey, how are you? You know, so-and-so. And they'd be like, what's wrong with this guy? And I like never missed an opportunity to try to connect with somebody. And then that really was the seeds of So Good. And then before the pandemic happened, I had been working for, you know, for 10 years at a job, and someone asked me, hey, how's life? And I was like, so good. And it really was. Like, it was just like everything was good because I had this, I try to tell people, it's as if you died and then you got a second chance. You know, it's like a, It's a Wonderful Life. If you've ever seen that movie with, you know, the Christmas movie where he, you know, these, all these bad things happen and he goes back through the town and he sees all the way it could have been. And then he comes out and it's funny, you know, like he's, his lips bleeding, you know? And I remember that as a kid, like my lips bleeding. It was that moment. Like, what a funny thing. Like, here he's so mad at himself that his lips bleeding and all the bad stuff that's happening. And then he gets a second chance and it's like, this is amazing. And that's how it was to me. Like, life was just amazing. Like, right. I saw it in a whole new life. Like, after my dad passed away, and I saw it as this, why is everyone, like, not getting along? Like, we should, you know, connect and love each other. So anyways, someone had said, dude, you should put that on a shirt. So good. So I put So Good, this logo, on a shirt. And we started to give them away. I think I gave them away and I was like, it was a $5 donation. And as we started to get money, I was like, oh, what do I do with this money? And then COVID began to start and I had friends that were like, hey, I think I'm going to lose my job, or once it did. And I was like, hey, here's the money that I have. This is all the cash that we have. Like, we raised it from this idea of So Good. And that's it. And wow. 2 or 3 years later, here we are. And everything was super organic. Like my kids, they couldn't go to school. And I went down there and I just saw teachers. I wish you could have seen some of these teachers trying to learn IT systems like Microsoft Teams and Zoom, and kids screaming in the background and not knowing how to mute all. And, you know, just an entire year of A, being overwhelmed as a teacher, but B, doing it over IT and having to have all these laptops put out. And I worked with West Data during that, you know, and having all of those systems, not letting those computers get out to the internet, but allow them to get to the internet that they needed, right? And so each of those kids is trying to test, what can I do on this laptop? You know, breaking it, dropping it, cracked screens, all that kind of stuff. So we had that at West Data. We had that at Boise. You know, we had that Valley View, all the different school districts. And then I had friends who had food trucks that were like, no one wants to come to the food truck. Everyone's scared of COVID. They don't know what this is. And I was like, ooh, what can I do here? So I went to West Data and different schools and said, if I could get a food truck to come to the school and all the interaction would just be teachers coming out for lunch, would that be okay? And they were like, yeah. So we just began to hire food trucks to go to West Data School District and different school districts and just sit down in the parking lot. And it was crazy. I remember, like, we all wore gloves and masks and hairnets. And, you know, we'd put the thing in a container, you know, and one person could only touch that container and then give it to the teacher. And, you know, we were doing, like, these big lists and putting them into, you know, IT spreadsheets and who couldn't have dairy and who was vegan and all that stuff. And, yeah, it was an absolute blast. But COVID was the catalyst for us because it was almost like I saw again all the frustrations of everything. Like, people were scared. People lost their jobs. There were people, like, on both sides of the aisle on everything. And I was like, all right, that's fine. Like, we can argue the merits of vaccines and masks. But, like, you see that teacher over there? Like, she didn't ask to be any part of this, right? Like, right. She, of all the people, like, that TSA person, right? Like, they're working 12-hour shifts with two masks on, right? And don't ever take it off. That law enforcement person is now in his car having to wear a mask to everywhere. And then, you know, you have a defund the police type thing. So now he's even not liked for that. Plus he's doing his job. And so my thing was like, no politics, no religion, no anything. You know, it was like back to Vegas, where it was like, we're on the streets. This person has been hurt and they need our help. And right. That's really what So Good was about. And to this day, that's what it's about. When people ask me, you know, how can I get involved? I'm like, when you're on 84 and you see someone going slow, just go around and wave instead of flipping them off. That's what So Good would be about. You know, if you see a teacher that's overwhelmed, you know, just say, hey, I think you're doing a great job. And we're not perfect, right? Like, you could even see in my own life, like, there's times where I'm like, man, I could have done that better. But that was the whole mission. That's the whole thing behind So Good, was community helping out.
That's amazing. Like, all of that, how heavy that is to take something that could have really gone negative and gone, like, oh, pity me, or, you know, I was involved with this. Like, you're taking that and saying, like, what an opportunity this is. What a way to give back that this is.
Yeah, I like that you said that, because that's such, I think that's the two roads you can go down in anything, just as people. So, like, you go through a divorce, you go through, you know, losing your job. There's a guy, he's here in the Valley, and an amazing guy, and they donate more wheelchairs than anyone else. He'd be a great person to have on here. But he broke his back skiing.
Wow.
And instead of, you know, going and saying, hey, man, poor me, he's obviously going to be wheelchair bound for, you know, his life. He decided to look at other people that don't have a wheelchair and begin to donate wheelchairs, you know, to other people. So that's what I always tell people. And I don't know, it's very hard for people to see that, because they're like, well, this bad thing happened. I'm just going to be angry. That's the path. And I'm like, it's very natural. It's very natural to go down that road. But that road has so much pain for you, and it doesn't heal anyone. And so for me, I just feel like when I meet people like that, I'm like, just try to find some good in that, because it's so healing. And it's way easier said than done. Like, don't get me wrong. It's way harder. But I'll just tell you, sitting in here talking to you, it's the most fulfilling thing that you'll ever do, is to get hit hard, to get knocked down. Like, your parents pass away, your boss passes away. I went through a really, you know, rough divorce and came out of that. And to be on the other side, and to look at someone and go, hey, I know exactly where you're at, and help them. It's so cathartic, and it's so healing. And I know it's so hard, because you feel like yourself, you know, you go home and you're like, I don't have anything in me. Like, I don't. Like, I'm so spent. You go down to the Boise Rescue Mission for a day, or you go down to the Idaho Food Bank, and you start helping, and all of a sudden, you're just walking out. Like, you feel like you're just floating. And right. That's it for me. It was just taking something that was really negative and trying to make something positive out of it.
Absolutely. So when you were there at the shooting, and you guys, you know, were crossing the street, like, what was that? I mean, were you helping people? Were you getting, like, what was that event actually like? I think there's been, you know, some people that I have talked with personally that were there as well. And it's just, everybody's experience is different. Everybody's perception is different. You have a little bit of training. Well, yeah. Not a little bit. You have training in what to do in, you know, situations like that. Like, what really happened?
I wish I would have. I mean, that's one of the things that, again, that night, I didn't even really understand what was going on until it was all over. I think a lot of people didn't. Everyone was, you know, running and going places. And then the other thing that happened that, like, a lot of people didn't know is that anyone that was close, like, even in that building, they took them to where the T-Mobile Arena, where they play hockey, and they were asking them questions, because there was, up until I think even the morning, there was supposedly a second shooter. There was a lot of information that came out. Someone had thought that there was a personnel on the floor that had stopped it, but actually what happened is that guy had, like, screwed a door shut that was a fire door, and that set off an alarm, so that guy went up there. And as he began to talk to the guy ended up shooting through the door and hitting him in the leg. And that happened first. We were told that happened after. But yeah, being on the streets, man, this is tough. I didn't even know what was going on. Like, I just, knew something bad was happening. But like afterward, if somebody tells you like, oh, that was a shooting, you would be like, oh, okay, yeah, that was a shooting. But if I would have told you the night before that someone would have broken a window on the 41st floor of the Mandalay, you know, and fired 150, 200 rounds with tracer rounds down onto a group, you would not have believed me.
Right.
It just, and even to this day, it makes no sense because there's no reason for it. Like if you followed that, he didn't have any accomplices. He didn't have anything. It doesn't make sense. It's one of those ones that like, I don't think any of them make sense, but like he wasn't like politically motivated. He wasn't racially motivated. I don't understand like why it was that event. Yeah, I mean, obviously I looked into it for a long time. Like his wife, he had sent her away like the week before, he gave her money and sent her out of the country. And there were like a lot of questions too, like, that I wrestled with myself, like being in the military, like, how did he get so many guns, you know, and how did no one catch this? And it, again, it's back to our thing with IT and ransomware. It's reactive. So now if you go to Vegas, you can't go to any floor that's not yours. You can't have a turn down. You can't turn down them cleaning your room more than once because he had said no several times. That was the other thing. Like he had been in the room for 5 days and said no.
That's interesting.
The thing, again, that I remember the most about that night was just about just how everybody was on the same level. So shooting happened. People were running out onto the streets. People were running, if you know that area, they were running toward the airport and jumping the fence. I mean, that entire area cleared out, you know. And then there were just cops everywhere. There were just cops everywhere. And again, had I known what was going on, I would have done things differently. But we were pushed as soon as everything happened. A lot of us, when the cops came, were like just kind of herded into these groups, and then they were like, "You can't leave because we've got to ask everybody what's going on." And the guy I was with was needing medication from his room at the Mandalay. And he was getting really nervous because whatever medication he needed. And so we went into a hotel and we just began watching the news. And I remember we were like thinking that it was like a shooting on the streets. We didn't know it came from the window. We just thought it was like gang violence or like something had happened at the concert.
Right.
And I'll never forget, it was like, four people have died. And I was like, oh, four people have died. That's terrible. And then we would walk through the hotel to try to get, you know, back to his room. And I'd look up again and it was like seven. And we never made it back to the hotel because by then the cops had, you know, got all of us and said, okay, you've got to go. All this area is off limits. And anyone, you know, that's here, you have to go to your room or whatever. And then the streets were completely vacant. And I remember a guy came down from the hotel. I'll never forget. He was like the head of this hotel, like huge hotel. It was like across from Mandalay, so whatever that would have been. And they had boxes of blankets that they just pulled out, you know, from shelves. And there were just people laying all over the floor, like under a craps table, you know, beside a machine. There would be a poker table. There were just people laying everywhere. And people were coming in through the doors. And we began to see people that had been, you know, hurt. And they were, like, yelling, like, I've lost my so-and-so. Where's my mom? Where's my dad? And it was just, like, pandemonium. And so we were trying to give out water bottles. We were giving out blankets. But I'll never forget, like, again, there were people were like, I've lost my phone. I need to call my parents. And people were like, here, take my phone. And they'd be like, no, just take it. Like, leave and go. Like, that, you can have it. And people giving phone chargers and waters and stuff like that. And so for the next whatever, that's how it was. We were all stuck in this area. I was actually in this, if you've ever been into a Vegas casino where they do sports betting. It was a big old sports betting area, and there were cops all around, and all of us were in this area stuck with these sports betting things, and then they all turned into the news. And they would ask us, you know, each one at a time would come out and ask, you know, what did you see and whatever, whatever, and give your statement and then come back. And then after a while, I think it was like 2 or 3 in the morning, they let us leave. And by then I was already headed to go donate blood because I found out about that. But the coolest thing for me that came out of that was just watching how everybody was on the same level. And I don't know how I can describe that more vividly, but even in today's day, when I see people, it's like we were all the same level of importance. And I think sometimes we forget about that. We get in our car and we see somebody walking on the street and we're like, you know, like I'm here and you're there, but we were all together. Like people would like pass a water bottle down, or they would, you know, ask where you were from. And there were people from out of the country, you know, not outside the United States, like didn't speak English, and maybe somebody would help them translate. But for that moment, the 175, 200 people that were in there, we were like all in the same level of humanity.
Right. Well, and I think as a society, when things like that happen and everybody does come together, what breaks my heart is that something tragic usually is what starts it.
Exactly.
And for communities and for the society, you know, especially with September 11th just happening, you know, we just had that memorial 21 years. You know, one of the phrases is never forget, and it's, you know, getting forgotten every single day of what happened. And I actually spoke with, or a firefighter was here in Boise speaking about it. He was there that day and he said, I wish our country could be September 12th.
Right.
And it's the same thing with this shooting. Is you, like you had said, the day after was actually really magical. Like everybody comes together and everybody forges and they say, hey, like here's my resources and here's your resources and here's what I know and here's what I have. Like, let's give this, you know? But yet on our day to day, it's so easy for us to judge, or for so easy for us to be like, well, I'm better than you because I have this and you don't have it.
Right.
And it's like, well, why does that make you, that doesn't make you any better. That actually makes you worse. Like,
right.
Why can't you give something to somebody that has less than you? Because you do have more.
For sure. I totally agree with you. And I don't know how to change the world. I had so many texts, you know, on this September 12th. From friends and family that knew I had joined the Marine Corps after September 11th, because I had joined in 2001 and then went in 2002. And I appreciate when people say, man, I wish we were like the 12th. But I say a couple things. One, that was a super tragic day.
Mm-hmm.
I would not want that again for that amount of community. Like that, those two things happen. Like, but all the tragic, all that it made us do was, I call it like a Venn diagram, right? So you have this Venn diagram and you're like, all that happened was inside of everyone's Venn diagram was a single thing. We all cared about each other. But then what happens is more things get into that two circles and we start having less and less in common, and then we just start to pull back. So I love that people say that. They're like, oh man, I wish, you know, we had September the 12th again. But I'm like, go back to then. What did you do? Just do that.
Right.
And there's this dumb story. Like I say dumb story. I don't know, child story. And it always gets me. But it's the story of the kid with his parents on the beach. There's a bunch of starfish. And for some reason, the starfish, so dumb story, but... the starfish, for some reason, they come higher up on the beach than they should, and then the tides go down way low, and they're not going to make it back in time. And there's just a bunch of them. There's millions. And so there's like a group of people that live there, and they're all watching it, and they're like, wow, this is going to be terrible. And this kid runs out and grabs one and throws one back. And his dad runs down and is like, dad, or son, it's just not going to matter. Look. And he throws another one, and he goes, it mattered to him. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it is for me. Like, I know people like they go, look, it's this huge divide now, right? Like it'll never be again. Like unless something tragic happens. And we stop and we help a teacher and I just look at them and I go, eh? It mattered. It helped them. Yeah. It mattered to them. And that's been the message of So Good, is that yes, we do tend to forget and we do tend to, you know, go down a road where and people do. And I don't feel bad at anyone who forgot about September 11th or who forgot about Vegas and went on their life. Because to some extent, that's what we do.
Right.
I mean,
it's a normal response.
It's a normal response. Like if a woman has a baby, she was like, wow, that was a terrible experience. I'll never do that again. And like 2 years later, they're like, well, I'm going to have another one. Because we just tend to forget that experience. And that's beautiful. I love that part. It's like those people went on with their lives. I don't want everyone looking over their shoulder going like, ooh, you know, is this going to happen? I love that my kids don't remember September 11th. I love that my kids were not in Vegas and they don't feel what I feel. But for me personally, every day I try to live a life that is, I don't know, in honor of the people that helped me and in honor of the things that happened to me. And that's where the change is going to happen. And I know, again, it's like the little kids, like, well, look at all these things. Like, we're never going to get to all of this. Like, that's true. But we will get to that one.
Yeah.
And we will get to that one. And so that's it for me. That's the message. You know, we're not looking for donations and things like that. We're not trying to change the world. We're just trying to do a message of community. And yeah, that's it.
That's incredible. So what things are you guys doing? I mean, besides just kind of, you know, like you said, with the food trucks, getting people out, like I've seen on your social media, you've taken a lot of veterans to, you know, the baseball game, like what are you doing or how are you getting money to do these things? Like, is it an organization, like a nonprofit? What does that look like?
So Good itself is a nonprofit. It's a 501c3 with the IRS. And the only reason I did that is because there were people that came to me and said, look, you know, businesses would love to give you money, but they need those, you know, they need to make sure it's a real nonprofit and has those tax exemptions. So we do have that. And we get a few donations here and there and we sell the product, but mostly it just comes from my wife and I. We've set in aside a certain amount of money every month. That's like, this is So Good money. This is money that we've given back. And I know people aren't going to believe this, but I wish I could show you my documents. Every year I feel like we do better and give back more. And I don't know how it happens because we started, you know, like with a percentage and we moved the percentage. And as we began to give, we received. And, I tell people, like, don't do it for that reason.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'll give that and I'll get money. But it has happened for us. And so for us, it's it was just a labor of love. It was something that we enjoyed and we loved doing. So what programs do we do? Because of being in the Marine Corps and, you know, military, one of the easiest things to do is take a vet to a local game. It just is so easy and so rewarding, right? You have this individual that's probably been through more strict COVID restrictions than you've ever seen, you know, haven't been able to leave their room, you know, just a lot more restrictions than you and I have had to deal with, and gets this opportunity after 2 or 3 years to go outside and sit at a baseball game and be normal. And for me, it's so cathartic and so awesome for a couple reasons. One, for that, but two, there was a whole group of people that came back from Vietnam and Korea where the mentality of the people versus the war and stuff, maybe those people didn't get to the love. So I get to do that. So I say, hey, thank you for what you did. And they're like, you remember Vietnam? I'm like, no, I don't remember anything about it. But I know that you left your home and you left people that you loved and you did something that you thought was in the best interest. And whatever I think about it, I think that you're a good person and I appreciate you for your time and effort and what you did for me. You didn't even know me.
Yeah.
And so we do that as often as possible. And then we do the food bank. And so the food bank is easy, right? It's just you show up, they have everything to do for you. So they just need bodies. So we like to do stuff like that where you just need a person. So with doing things for the veterans, you just need a body. I need somebody to sit beside somebody at an Idaho Steelheads game. And when, you know, this veteran says, hey, can I get a beer? You go get him a beer and bring it back, and you just hang out with him. That's really all I need. I can buy the tickets. We take them, you know, fishing, same thing. It's like a child, right? Like maybe their fingers aren't as nimble as they were, you know, you're putting the bait on and throwing it out and then handing it to them. So just bodies for things like that. And then we do a ton with Toys for Tots. I love Toys for Tots. It's super rewarding because it goes to children.
Right.
It goes to children. And the thought in my mind that there's a child out there somewhere that asked for something and I get to do it. Like if you've ever done Toys for Tots, you get a piece of paper and it'll say, hi, my name is so-and-so and this is my situation. And I have three kids and this is their ages. And these are some of the things that they're interested in. And then I go, oh, that's really cool. Like I see this name, you know, Joey, and he's 9. And I get to go pick out a gift for Joey. And I'll never get to meet that kid, right? But it goes into the basket and the Toys for Tots people give it to that child. And so that's something that we're doing. And then I would love to work more with the schools like Boise School District and West Ada and Valley View and Caldwell and Nampa to try to find teachers that we could do the food trucks for. The issue that I have now is because COVID has somewhat subsided, the food trucks are harder to get, and there's kids at school now. So before it was easy. There was no kids there.
Right.
So teachers could come and go as they please. So now I have to do it like on Friday at 4, and we have to figure out parking. So what I'd love is for someone to maybe help with that. Like a school would say, look, we'll do all the parking. We'll figure out where you can park. We'll tell the teachers. We'll get the list of what they want. You know, who has a dairy, who has a, you know, allergen. And then you just get the food truck and, you know, pay for it at the end. So that's what I've been trying to do is get with the PTOs and PTAs and the different schools and say, if you have teachers that need love and you have parents that want to do it, if you guys would set it up, we'll fund it.
Wow.
And maybe even have other people fund it. And not because I don't, you know, want to pay for it, but like, what if it was funded by Albertsons or Winco? I just thought, well, maybe these companies would want their name on something that's giving back.
Right. And it's also sharing that so good with other people and what they can be doing too, you
right.
know? So it doesn't have to always be your money or your time or your body.
Yeah.
Like that's what you're bringing people in to do is
right.
like, hey, like, let me be an example of how we can give back into the world in a positive aspect. And you can do it too.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be a genius to be doing what you're doing.
Right.
You just have to have a good heart.
For sure.
And I think sometimes just the way our society is that to be the outsider, it's so much harder. Like, you know, to be a good person, like, you feel like that outsider. And so you don't want to do it. And
yeah.
you just, like, hold back. And
right.
you're like, it's easier to be in the dark or in the shade and not get, you know, the glory. But it's like, no, it is hard. It's hard to talk about tough things and it's hard to talk about, you know, why you're doing these things. But for God's sake, like it makes you feel so good.
For sure. For sure. Absolutely.
Look at that
and,
phrase.
Yeah,
so good.
Yeah. And I haven't watched it, but apparently at the end of the KTVB interview, I had said, do something good for no reason at all. And I had really meant to say, you know, a random act of kindness. But honestly, this is the way I feel about it. In my subdivision, and we know this in schools and whatever, you'll come out and they'll be like, hey, look, there's a broken window. And they're like, why? And they're like, we don't know. Someone just thought it would be funny. There are random acts of violence all the time. They don't have to have any political or
right.
religious affiliation. They just are. Like some kid thought it would be funny to break X. So we're the opposite of that.
Yeah.
We are so good, the community, and the idea is for no reason. It doesn't have to have a reason. Like you're walking down the street in Boise, you see a car, the meter's just about to expire and you pay for it. And you never, the person has no idea. And I love that idea. Like to me, that's the balance and the force, right? It's like there's people over here going like, how can we make things hard? And I'm like, how could we make things better? But for no reason, like
yeah.
just for no reason at all. And you know, if anyone like ever hears this message and like, how can I be involved? I guarantee you can find a way to do something good for no reason at all. It could be like in the Starbucks line and be like, I want to pay for the person behind me. At a restaurant, you see a vet and be like, hey, I want to pay for their table. And it spreads the same way that the negative spreads, I think.
Yeah. I think tenfold because, I mean, people... I feel like it's so rare sometimes that we see that. And so then other people are like, oh, like I could do that too.
Right.
It is pretty simple to do right. that. It is pretty simple. So how can we get people to help you in So Good for Bodies at Games, for, you know, the rescue mission? How can we get people to come and help you?
So we have obviously all the social media, and I try to do pretty good at responding to everyone that's on there. We have a website. I tried to get sogood.com, but someone's sitting on it, as people do, and there's no website there. So we're sogood-life.com. But if you go on there, it has everything. I think it has my phone number on there and your email, and it has, we have PayPal and Venmo that are both verified by PayPal to be a 501c3. So when you go on there, it'll say you're donating to a tax, you're donating to a 501c3, here's your IRS receipt. So you have that verification process, and we don't, PayPal doesn't take any of that money, you know, when they transfer it to us. So there's that. And then there's a website off of that website that has all of the apparel. So if you want So Good stuff, and honestly, all of that money goes right back to So Good. We don't make any money. We don't take any money. We don't like have, you know, none of us have salaries and things like that. And so we've done ones for, Peyton, Super Peyton. She's a girl out of Marcine that has a type of stomach cancer. So we have shirts that are just Super Peyton shirts. All of the money goes to that family. So if you want to help and you want to know where to be or how to be, I would say the easiest thing is Facebook. We have a So Good page on Facebook. We have a So Good page on Instagram. And then the website. And then the website, obviously, at the bottom has both of those links for Instagram and Facebook. The donations part is one of those things. I really don't like to take donations because I feel like people are like, are you legit? Like, here's my money. I'm like, come to an event. Like, come do something with us and help in that way. Or if you just are like, you want to do something, just wear a So Good shirt or a hat and be like, hey, we're doing this as part of the community.
Yeah.
That's the message.
Awesome. Well, as we wrap up, I just want to thank you for coming on and sharing your story and how incredible, you know, you've taken things that could be very dark and heavy in your life and turn them into the positive. And that's, you know, one inspiration of this podcast is just sharing people's stories like yours and, you know, how you overcome that and why you overcome that. So I appreciate you coming on, and listeners, definitely reach out to Parker, and if you need anything, find him on social media. He's been an absolute, you know, pleasure to be able to talk with and, you know, get to know outside of this podcast as well. And we'll put all of your links in our show notes, so you guys can also find them in there. Anything else to say?
No, I very much appreciate it. I would say to anyone, you know, that's been in that place where you're struggling, definitely reach out to somebody. There's a ton of people that care. Reach out to me. Honestly, I would help you in any way that I can. That's what we live for.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, I appreciate you. That was So Good with Parker, and we will see you next week for another episode. Thank you guys. Thank you for tuning into the show today. Your feedback is very important to me. If you could leave a review as well as follow me on Instagram at rawthoughts.podcast and email in at m.rawthoughts@gmail.com if you have any guest suggestions.